everybody. This is Mandy Speaks Up, and this is part two for Escaping the CFM Cult with Heather Wiley. If you have not seen part one, the links are going to be below, so check out that link to listen to part one, because it was extremely eye-opening. It was heroic for Heather to speak out on some of the things that she spoke about were very, it touched me because there was things that I have dealt with as well. And I had people reach out after to also let me know how much it was strength and like hope that you can speak out. It doesn't matter what was done to you, no matter how small or insignificant, whatever happened in that place by a survivor speaking out, it causes others that have experienced the same or even in any kind of toxic environment to give them hope that if you speak up, you will be heard. There are people that will listen. There are people that will believe you. So I'm super excited to have part two. In part two, we're going to talk about the healing. We're going to talk about how Heather was shunned and how that's a normal thing for those that have escaped the CFM cult who choose to walk away. You, many times, if not all the time, you're going to be shunned in some way or somehow, which can be a good thing in disguise. But when you've been inside of this community for so long and some have been born into it, it's not very easy because you'll be completely shunned from those that supposedly loved you. And then you realize that it was all just for an agenda. So we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the healing. What are some ways that Heather used to heal from the trauma and to realize that it was even trauma in the first place? And who was there to help her? What support team? What community? So we're going to talk about all of that. So let's go ahead and welcome Heather Wiley. Thank you again, Heather, for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm super happy to be here. And also thank you to everybody who also reached out to me afterwards and either shared love and compassion with me, because I had a lot of people who haven't experienced this, but still sent me a lot of love and compassion. So if you speak out and exit a controlling environment, which is essentially what a cult is, trust me, there are people out there who will send you lots of love and compassion. Number two, thank you to everybody who was in the Potter's House, either with me or at other locations. Thank you for reaching out as well and letting me know that it was validating for you to hear my aspect of the experience. I receive all your love and I'm just really grateful. And I am so thankful that in turn, talking about such a dark, negative chapter can be flipped on its head into something positive and good, because it doesn't have to stay there for sure. I'm ready to launch in.
Exactly the word validating. That's the word I was looking for, because it was so validating to your story and all of our stories and those that have reached out to me that want to eventually share their story here as well. So if you're watching this and you do want to, if I forget at the end to say this, if you're watching this and you hear our stories and you do want to speak up about your experience inside of the CFM cult, you could go ahead and reach out to me. My email will be below in the links as well. So Heather, let's begin. So you left the cult in 2011, and I want you to go ahead and speak about those last moments, those last weeks, or that last month, or what was what was done to you, you leaving, how was that leaving? And then after you left, how was it that you were able to come back into the world, a world that had been, you had been groomed to believe was evil and everybody was going to hell? And how did you integrate it back into society?
That's a good way to put it, integrate back into society. I should probably mention straight out the gate for anyone else wanting to reach out to you to share their story. That was my first time sharing my story out loud to anybody that didn't already know. And I have to tell you, as much as I've already done to like work on balancing my ability to share my truth, AKA balancing my throat chakra is another way to put it. After sharing that, I literally felt my throat chakra energy center. Like your body has energy flowing through it, right? And trapped emotions create a physical blockade so that the energy can't naturally flow through your body like it's meant to. And so anyway, it was amazing. After talking, I literally felt my throat chakra open even more, and I felt energy moving like that needed to come out and be said. So yeah, okay. So, oh, and I also want to say real quick on the YouTube from the last episode, a couple people made some comments, like a questions or a request, and I promise I will answer those, and I'll remember that, and I'll get to those. So the towards the end about being shunned. So everybody's story is probably a little bit different. It is such an oppressive, controlling environment, which it's easy to say that now. And it's easy to be like, how could you stay in such a dark, oppressive environment? Well, just as we share this story, just keep it in mind, if you haven't experienced this, that the beginning of it starts with very high ideals, very promising, very bright, very good, very high moral ground. And I have since really come to the personal conclusion that the high moral road at any cost is not the high moral road. The greater good at the sacrifice of yourself, self-betrayal for the greater good or the highest moral road. And I can clarify that probably is not necessarily it. And when you first start going to this church, and I'm going to say church because in my mind, I thought it was a church. It is 100% a cult, but I thought it was a church, right? So you're going in there for community. There's nothing wrong with community. You're going in there because, you know, you want to believe in a higher power. There's nothing wrong with that. I still believe in one. You know, it's taken a long time for me to refer to it as God again, but I can say God now. I think of it as source, like the source of all life, creator, the universe. And now I can safely consider it God again, but I personally don't adhere to any religion. So you think you're getting into something good, you're doing something that is for children, to make a better world for your kids and your community's kids. You do believe, and all Christians do. And not all Christianity is cultish, but I will insert here that there is a lot of fundamentalist Christianity that, whether they intend to be a cult or not, because no cult walks out going, oh, we're going to be a cult, and we're just not going to tell anybody. They don't operate like that. Once you start practicing like a cult, you're a cult, even if you're just a regular Christian church. So there's a lot of Christian churches that operate this way. Not all of them do, but some. So you get into this community. In Christian religion, and usually most religions, there's some concept of God and heaven, the devil and hell. So I did adhere to that belief before I even started going in. And so you do believe that you're rescuing souls, you're rescuing people from literally hell. Like, I can almost struggle to say it now because it's like, it's just such a dumb concept to me now. And it never made sense to me then either, because if God is so pure and loving and good, yes, I understand free will. And that's why there's like a lot of chaos, because there's, you know, there's the element of freedom. But now I cannot comprehend a hell unless you personally wish for it and manifest it or something like that. So anyway, I just can't emphasize that enough. You get into this with a positive mindset. Or you're struggling, or you're from a community that doesn't have a lot, or you're from a life that it's either church and being involved with a positive community, or it's going into the military, you know, because they prey on these kind of communities. So you go into it, and then it has all this structure towards focusing on one aspect only. So little by little, you just start to not even realize that you've gone from going into something hopeful and positive, that it's turned into something that's got you like this. And that it, and eventually, like, even if you see all the nonsense, you're somehow convinced that this is the best way, This is the highest moral road. This is the highest level of commitment. This is the truthiest true. This is the highest love. And that's how you can end up staying trapped in a situation like this. Then you start adding other layers, and now I'll get to, you know, answering your question, which is, you know, what did it look like when I was leaving? So you have to understand that at some point I really started waking up to the fact that this place was really harmful, that things were stupid. Like, it's stupid to fake going to an altar call just so that other people feel comfortable going to the front. Like, that's stupid. It's stupid to, and we talked about this after our last podcast, to think that it's so important to go to church that even if you're deathly ill, you still have to go. The amount of times I went to church in excruciating pain, like excruciating physical pain, the only times I couldn't go to church, even though I was sick, was it was literally coming out both ends, and I lost so much weight I was skin and bones. And then I went to church with my clothes literally falling off of me because I was skin and bones, and no one gave a damn except for a couple of people. Shout out to you. I was so stressed. I was getting glands constantly with like blocks in them. And I would get like behind my ears. I would get like, if you cut a ping pong ball or a golf ball in half, just swollen. My body was so tight. I like, you know, all these, you know, physical things, because, it was just such a negative environment. So long before I left, so like for me, leaving was more than 1 month, because I had to think about my stepkids, and I had to find a way to convince their father, to let us go to a normal church. And there was also, so leaving for me was more like several years. And as I saw things that were stupid, I quit. I did the bare minimum to survive being there. So like I explained last time, I started just wearing jeans, and here's the shunning that happens. Cause you get shunned inside. You don't even have to leave. You already start getting shunned the second you start behaving like a person with a personality.
Right.
Once you deviate from the cookie cutter, like, way of being, once you call anything out, like, you start getting shunned. So I would wear jeans. People didn't like, I would get reported to the pastor. People would, who were there to, in their minds, they're helping me stay on the high moral ground. So if you're wearing something that's inappropriate, the pastor's wife would come and be like, "That's inappropriate. You need to not wear this shirt. Let's get you this sweater and cover you up." That doesn't seem like much, but when you're sitting there and somebody comes and literally shames you, even if they're saying it politely, even if they're saying it forever, it's for the better, you know, I can't even keep up with the bullshit anymore right now. My sister did comment on the previous video that I was elevated, and I have to, even before she commented on that, I have to say, and I feel like this is relevant right now, I have to say, I did afterwards, I noted myself that I was elevated, and I started policing myself. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't have to be perfect. I don't have to say everything perfect. So like, even to this day, there's still layers of deprogramming.
For sure.
How I was.
Right.
Because there was so much pressure to be perfect all the time. Because if you're not perfect, you're going to cause someone to go to hell. And that sounds ridiculous, but the logic was, you're meant to be the guiding star for people to be able to live their highest good and their best life and go to heaven and reap all the spiritual rewards that are so dumb, I can't even remember them anymore. And the thing that clicked when my sister also commented, she's like, "Yeah, you were very elevated." It was not a negative comment. She was just observing because she knows me and she knows what an intense story it was. And the thing for me, recalling all that time and what I felt the most back then was frustration. And I've since learned all of us have, like, our bodies are a beautiful guidance system to show us what's right for us in our life, and that will guide us to our highest potential, our happiest life, our way of life, where we will actually be a bright light to others by living in alignment with ourselves. And I've since learned that for me, if something is not in alignment for me, and it's not, and it goes against my natural grain, like, there's ways that for me, I'm naturally happiest, I'm naturally in the flow, I get in my zone of genius, all my best attributes, it's like a guide, it's my inner guiding light towards living the best life that's in alignment for me.
Yep.
Well, for me, the sign that this ain't for you is frustration. And that's what I constantly felt, like, constant frustration, like, wanted to literally, the phrase head desk, where you want to bang your head against a desk in frustration, that was me. And so it's like, I can't even think about that time without remembering that extreme frustration. So now imagine me in this church where you're meant to be a dulcet darling, where you're meant to wear really nice feminine clothing, where you're meant to love all your children in the church and clean the church and take care of babies, take care of your husband. Nothing wrong with those things if that's in alignment for you and if that's what brings you joy. But this place forced you to be a certain way, no matter what your gifts were, no matter what your talents were, no matter what went against your grain and was, like, not your forte. I always felt overwhelmed, because everything about my existence in that church was against my natural grain. Bible calls it bent, you know, you have a natural bent. And so now I'm in this church, I'm realizing I hate just about everything. Everything's dumb. Everything's not biblical. So I started physically acting that way. I would walk in constantly frustrated. So then what happens? Here's where the shunning kicks in. You have such a bad attitude. Why are you so negative? Why are you scowling? Because it's not that they're gossipers, even though they are gossipers. In their minds, they're talking about what's wrong with me, so that way they can get the passive aggressive message across to me that I'm not living my life right. The pastor would, like, I think I mentioned this last time, the pastor would come to my house and he would sit me and my husband down to have words with me about how I'm not doing things right. I would, in Sunday school, I would start arguing with the pastor in front of people sometimes. Eventually I shut down completely, but I'd be like, that's not necessarily the case for everybody, or, you know, that's, you know, what if that's not, you know, I just kind of just started.
Well, I'm contesting. Sure they hated you.
Oh, shoot. And it's lucky, because it was guy that was a pastor at that point, like, the pastors changed 3 times while I was there. Mm-hmm. At this point, this is in a different path. He was nice person, and he was a sweet natured person. So that's the only reason I got away with as much bullshit as I got away with. Right. But even with that, like, and because I remember, you know, like I said, I would sneak to the movies. And this is towards the end. So towards the end, I already had a TV in my house. I was already going to the movies. I was already going to the video store at 11 p.m. to rent movies. And, you know, people would dob me in. They would rat me out. And it does. I feel like it doesn't sound like much, but when it's a constant peppering of everything about you is wrong, you're doing everything wrong, you're not doing this, you're such a bad attitude, you have such a wonderful husband, why don't you blah, 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 blah. So leading up towards the end, I was trying more and more and more to just live like a normal person, despite going to this church, and just everything I did was wrong all the time. So it's basically the same things over and over. It's the pastor's wife pulling you to the side, other women pulling you to the side, people politely having conversation with you in church, basically through in between the lines, pointing things out to you that are wrong, or that you should have a better attitude, or you should be more grateful for this, or you should be more grateful. Just all the time.
Well, you're under a microscope.
And you're under a microscope. It's a torment. And the whole time, you're never allowed to listen to your intuition.
Oh, of course not. They don't want you to.
You're never allowed to be yourself. I have a very loud personality. I have a natural bent towards being like, I don't give a fuck. And I listen to loud music. I wear loud clothes. Here's the thing. Slowly but surely, they start breaking down, you know, how you dress. So they start deconstructing who you are through all these rules. And I found that about myself. You know, I stopped dressing like myself. Towards the end, I start trying to dress like myself again. There's just so many ways where they separate you from who you actually are by how they teach and how they behave. Someone on YouTube asked, can you talk more about how they like made fun of you from the stage? The question was posed differently, but that's, I think, essentially what they were saying.
Okay.
So, well, what happened is, the pastor would come visit you at your house, not just to lecture you. There would be times where the pastor would visit your house to make a house call, to say, how are you? What's going on? Checking in with your husband because, you know, he's meant to be like a leader in ministry and blah, 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 blah. But guess what he would do while he was there? He was essentially walking around, you know, doing the whole dust check. He didn't literally do that. But he's looking at your house to see everything. Is everything in order? Are you doing? Which, by the way, insert here. I didn't know this, but when I got married to a hoarder. Like, true level hoarder. Like, we could do a whole podcast on that aspect. So I'm also married to a hoarder, and I'm just a young person trying to figure out the
chaos. And you're not married anymore. Let me just say, that was your ex-husband.
I'm not anymore. At the time. I was in the Potter's house. And so then, lo and behold, Sunday morning, pastor would be preaching or doing Sunday school, and he would crack some jokes about how, you know, somehow you'd fit it into the lecture or the sermon. Like, oh, the dishes are dirty and this and this. And he was verbatim rattling off the list that it was wrong with my housekeeping. And even if nobody knew who it was, I knew who he was making fun of from stage. And sometimes it'd be innocuous stuff. Like, we had a church sports game where everybody was out playing soccer, football. And I got hit with the soccer ball on my butt or something. I can't remember. Like, instead of kicking it, I got hit with it. And he made fun of that off the stage. And so that might be more this pastor, may not be everybody, but I'll tell you what, Wayman Mitchell, who was the leader of the Potter's House, he, you know, we would watch videos of him, even if he couldn't go to a conference. Oftentimes the highlight reel of the conferences, you would at church later watch videos of them. There were plenty of times where there were sermons with the leader of the CFM cult saying the most derogatory, shitty things about other human beings, especially women. Like, I can't verbatim remember what he said, but one time he was like making fun of women that came to the altar who you could see right down to the Grand Canyon, and shirts or like shirts where you could see their cleavage. And then he also referenced women who had skirts. It was the skirts, the short skirts, where he said you could see up to the Grand Canyon, that he said. Other stuff, like, I don't remember everything, but that was very much a thing. And I know there were other people in church that he made fun of. Because you get to know these people so well that everything was very passive aggressive from the stage, from people, except for when it wasn't. And when it was like straight up in your face, like, pull it together. And then again, they separate you from your family. If you have any friends or family, it wasn't just my ex who did this. The church encourages this, where it separates you from people. So that's how you stay so trapped. And it's so hard to leave because you don't have anything outside of it anymore. Because over the years, that systematically gets broken down. Mm-hmm. So for me leaving, it wasn't like 1 month. It was a several years of basically me causing more and more of a stink. You know, it was a huge deal that I had a TV in my house. And then it was a huge deal when I stopped hiding that I was going to the movies. Huge deal when I stopped hiding that I was going to the video rental place. When I stopped wearing church clothes, when, you know, so finally, so it wasn't like a dramatic 1 month where I planned my get out, but I know for a lot of people that that's the only way to do it. And also the only way to do it would be to, you just have to rip the Band-Aid off and do something really bad so that you are essentially kicked out. Like you got to just fucking go a binge drink on the night on the town or something. And you got to like,
or fornicate
or have sex with somebody.
Right. Cause that's terrible.
You know? Oh, so many things. Cause I would start reading books. Like I was into vampires and I got into Twilight. Oh my God. That was so demonic.
Oh, no Harry Potter. No Harry Potter.
And when Harry Potter first came out, I was all on the no Harry Potter train because that's witchcraft, that's magic, that's this and this and this and that. You know, it's you know, that's a conversation we can have, but at the end of the day, these are books, and
there's just a lot of rules.
It's just another rule. You know what? Movies, books, stories, you know, artwork, perfect or not. They're important because through seeing good examples, you get inspired, but also through seeing things from like a gray area lens or sometimes a really bad lens, you know, your mind starts clicking and putting things together and your concept of things expand because you've been forced to look at stuff from different angles. And, you know, so this church, you're not allowed to have Facebook, MySpace, Twitter,
social media
is bad because why?
I mean, we can talk about the things we're not allowed, right? Men weren't allowed facial hair, you know,
hardly. No, mm-hmm. They had to shave. They had to wear a tie. They had to all this stuff.
And also depending on which cult leader was there, that's going to depend on how harsh things were. I know one, the last cult leader that we had, became one of the harshest. Was trying to get women to stop wearing makeup, was trying to get women to stop wearing high heels, was trying to stop getting women to wear anything but long dresses and long skirts. And I totally rebelled against that. I totally went out and bought higher high heels, shorter skirts, because by that time it was.
You are on your way out.
I was on my way out.
You were on your way out. Really, oh, that would never excited. Have flown in Australia. Australia is way too fashionable. That would never freaking fly. Ever out there.
I mean, I already was fashionable, but when he personally tried to change that, it was getting really bad. He, you know, but you know what? Honestly, I'm if that's what helped me leave.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the abusive, he was actually the most abusive cult leader that we had. So that helped me leave.
That actually just reminded me of something. So you know, like, you know, for me, it was a slow process leaving. Oh shoot, it just kind of flew out my head. Hang on. Oh, anyway, I'll just continue going and it'll come back to me. So I did actually eventually convince my ex to let me and the boys leave because my stepkids, I convinced him how harmful it was for them. And to just let us go to a regular church. That was good. That's another thing. The high moral road, the other churches aren't doing it as good. That's why that instantly made them all bad. And so a lot of reasons people struggle leaving unless they do the whole like just blow it all up type leaving. You're convinced that churches have it wrong. other churches have it wrong, and you're the only ones who have it right. There's no room for organic growth. There's no room for you to go on your own journey of growth. There's no room for churches to have different visions and being led in a different way.
And for those that want to leave, that don't even want to believe in religion or in their picture of God, a lot of people will leave the cult and they'll end up going to another church, and then they'll realize, you know, this church is basically kind of saying the same stuff that the cult was saying. They're just saying it's sweeter and giving you sugar with it.
Okay.
And so, you know, because that's what happened with me. I went to another church, and then I remember sitting there one time, like, I think it was like a month after I left the cult, and this preacher is basically saying the same stuff that the cult was saying, except he's saying it a little bit nicer. But my whole body, by that time, I was already learning that my body had the answers, and my body just started, alarm bells were ringing, like, this is not the cult, but he's basically saying the same stuff of like, just forgive. It doesn't matter what people have done to you, just forgive. It doesn't matter if you've been violated, if you've been abused, if things have been done to you, just forgive and forget. And that's because if not, God's not going to forgive you. And then you're going to go to hell.
Bullshit.
Right? Like, fuck you. I don't have to.
I'm holding two fingers up because there's two things I'm going to try to remember to say and not like get lost on a bunny trail.
Because I definitely want to know about you being shunned. Like, how were you completely shunned, and how did that feel to lose a community?
Yeah. So in a large sense, that was already happening inside of the church. I was already being shunned. And also, so much was going down with the whole, because remember how I mentioned how the U.S. headship churches came to Australia to rip everyone out? That was starting to align with this other pastor who was starting to kind of balance out. So that all of that was happening around the time I finally left. So a few other people also left, which is funny because some of those people were the people who were partially the meanest to me. And I've realized since then that sometimes you, when you start living your more in alignment with yourself and being true to who you are, you're going to naturally either inspire people or trigger them. Because, and the reason you trigger them, it's kind of a weird way to explain it, is because they see something in you. And I realize this because I've experienced it and I've learned to identify it when it happens to me. They see something in you that they wish for themselves. And so in retrospect, now I understand it didn't make sense to be like, why were these people so shitty to me? And they left before I even did. Like, these were people that reported me to the pastor for my jeans, who called me something devil. Because remember, this is the mid-2000s when low-rise jeans were super popular and you couldn't help but your G-string show sometimes. As much as I tried to like always be whatever, I'm a bit of a tomboy. I bend over. I do normal shit. So I found out through the gossip train that I was accidentally showing my G-string sometimes at church. Like, congrats. You're welcome.
Right. I just feel like, you know, life is so miserable in there that they're going to, people are going to be shitty.
But, you know, they were shitty because they were seeing me start to liberate myself, I think is what it was. So anyway, I'm saying that. So when I left, people, I was already shunned in the church. Some of those people left, some of them stayed and like dug in deeper. So the church was already crumbling a bit when I left. It wasn't as strong as it was. And then they did get another pastor in, I think, who was tougher, but that just inspired me even more to just GTFO. Some of the timeline stuff is blurry to me now, and I don't really remember everything. But in the church, there were basically people I knew to talk to and people I knew never to talk to. And I never wanted to see them again, including the previous pastors. They had come back to town later eventually to visit. And I just was like, nah, I'm not seeing you. I'm not talking to you, nothing. So I started creating my own bubble of life because I stopped, investing energy in this place as much. So basically I had already experienced the peak amount of shunning they could throw at me. So when I left, I was more than happy to never see their stupid faces again. There were plenty of people in the church I absolutely loved, though. I actually kind of loved everybody because I understood what they were going through. But that was just the attitude I had because I was already so like, bro, peak, like, I'm going to literally blow up because of this place, that I left and I like never wanted to look back. I didn't care any of these people. I had reached the point where like, right. I don't give a fuck. I'm building my own life and I just don't give a fuck about any of this. And I'm replicating, like, I'm okay. The reason I'm saying that in high energy is because I'm matching where I was at. I was like, I'm ready to build my own life. Now,
good anger.
I believe that at the time I worded it this way, that God is good, God is love. Everything in the Bible only makes sense if you look at it through the filter of pure, unjudgmental love. And so I went to church ready to just experience God properly again. But when I got there, and so here I want to get to the two things. Like, don't let me bunny trail off these two things. I really wanted to say these two. Okay, one is, I got there, I started going to church, and I started having giant, unexpected panic attacks. Here I am in a church that was good. You know, churches are going to be imperfect no matter what. That was good. People were decent. Pastor was a cool dude preaching good stuff.
And this is the church after you left the cult?
Okay. I went straight to, technically it's an Assemblies of God church in Alice Springs. I forget what it's called. Good church. You know, the pastor was real sweet. He could sense that I'd been through shit. And he would always say really encouraging things. He's like, the best is yet to come. The best is yet to come. Like, I can get emotional just thinking about that phrase because that was like literally my lifeline at that time. But I'm at church and I'm experiencing two things. One is massive panic attacks. Like, there were things that would give me a panic attack, but I wanted to heal them. So stuff like going to the altar, the idea of going to the altar gave me a panic attack. So I wouldn't go. And it just was the most healing experience to freely choose to stay and not go to the altar. And then eventually I did go to the altar when I wanted to. And it wasn't for repentance. It was just to receive God's love. And for me, that was very healing. However, eventually my ex started coming. And he, of course, wanted to get involved in leadership immediately in this place. And so I would get pulled in sometimes to small groups that are more for leadership in the church. And girl, I started having the biggest panic attack. You would think I was demon possessed. I didn't even know what was happening. I was sitting there and I literally felt like just this heavy energy coming up. And I just started like almost an extreme panic attack. Like, I couldn't sit there. I was just sorry for the noise.
Drama.
Like, I just was like, but I had been so trained to suck it the fuck up and to sit there and to do what you gotta do, no matter what. So I didn't even have the concept of thinking, wow, my body is telling me it is not okay or happy right now. Right. Let me walk outside. Let me breathe. Let me get some air. Let me hug myself. Let me give myself some compassion and understand where this is coming from. All I could think was, oh my God, it's happening again. We're going to have to be in leadership. I'm going to have to betray myself all the time. Like, if I could put words to it, that's what it was. At the time, I was just too severe to stress. Oh man, I'm going to cry just thinking about it.
Well, that's trauma, PTSD. It was memories.
Too severe of a distress. And all I could think of was like, God, I hear it is all over again. I'm going to be shamed. I wasn't. Because this actually was a really nice church for the most part. You know, again, not perfect. I was like, damn, they're going to all think I'm demon possessed. That was literally all I was thinking. Because I was having such a severe public panic attack that I was like, that's the only conclusion is that they're going to think I'm demon possessed. And that I'm so bad and so evil. It did eventually happen because I was married to a narcissist. So what happens when you're married to a narcissist is inevitably people will wonder why you have such a bad attitude when you're married to an angel. And that unfortunately still happened in this place. But I have to say, I have to be fair and say, for the most part, this was a decent church. And that brings me to the second point. Let me give myself a moment.
Yeah, it was trauma and PTSD, you know, and that shows things like this is the picture that the shit that happened to you in that place was real. And this is the validation, right? This is the validation you're receiving before anybody else will validate it. Your body, your own body is showing you and validating you like, hey, Heather, hey, Mandy, you did go through this. This shit is real. This shit is really painful.
And stuff, you know, so I want to say I have healed. When I say I've healed, I feel like I should clarify. My PTSD was so bad. My entire life was over. It was a screeching halt. And I can explain the aftermath and paint a picture of what the aftermath was like, because I feel like that's really important. So now when I say I've healed my PTSD enough that I can resume my life. I have creativity flowing again. I have dreams again. Things are moving in my life again. I'm enjoying everything again. And now when something I still haven't processed comes up, I know how to process it now. You know, and I know ultimately what it is. Don't ignore your body. Mm-mm. Love yourself. When you have an emotion come up, you're so valid and worthy. You know, that emotion matters. Doesn't matter where it comes from. Doesn't matter how many years it's been. You know?
Exactly.
And that moment,
not being taught.
In that moment, you just need to take a second and go back in time to yourself in that moment. And just like visualize yourself giving yourself the love that you needed at that time.
Yes, in the words, yes.
And then it doesn't matter if it was 20 years ago. That will register in your body today. Like just now, it felt really good to stop, acknowledge all the emotion that came from that memory because it was very painful.
Yes.
Yeah, and love myself through it. And give myself compassion, because all I needed was compassion and just permission to exist.
Exactly.
Perfect or not.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The words are that you are perfect. This place told us we weren't perfect. They told us everything that was wrong with us. And then not only that, they would tell you what you needed to do in order to fit, to be that
cookie model, cutter,
to be for the God.
God damn cookie God. Cutter.
Exactly. And yeah. I want to share that, you know, I remember a therapist saying the fact that they wouldn't allow you to do the things that you wanted to do was abuse. Mm-hmm. And when that therapist shared that in a therapy session, me and my son are sitting there. And when she, just that statement alone validated so much, because it was like, that's it. If you have no other story of abuse in that damn place, if they did not allow you to do something that you wanted to do, right, you couldn't mm-hmm. go to the movies, you couldn't read certain books, you mm-hmm. couldn't listen to certain music, you couldn't go have fun, you couldn't, whatever it was, that's abuse. Yeah. From a therapist, that yeah. is abuse. If that's 100%. All you have, we're validating you today that was abuse. They didn't let mm-hmm. you do that. They took your money and they said you couldn't do this with your money. You need to do this with your money. That's abuse.
Oh my God. Do I have stories on that front? I even forgot about all that bullshit, but yes.
Yeah. If you can't wear something you want to wear, that's abuse. You can't go somewhere.
Oh, and you have to do stuff that you feel violently uncomfortable doing. Violently uncomfortable doing. You have to fucking do it. That's the attitude that was there. You have to go door knock on strangers' houses and interrupt them on a Saturday morning when they're just watching cartoons and eating cereal. You know?
Right.
And that felt so horrific to me, to go knock on a stranger's door and bother them. And yet I had to go do this shit until I started realizing that I didn't.
Exactly. Anyway. I remember leaving the cult, one of the first things I did was dance. Because I wasn't in the cult, we weren't allowed to dance. I was so evil. And I remember actually, honestly, for those that leave a cult and want to know what are the first things you can do to heal, And they always want this deep answer. And, you know, I've shared in my other interview that I did, and it was, do what feels good to you, do what makes mm-hmm. you happy. And for me, it was dancing. And I remember going out dancing so many times, dancing by myself, twirling on that dance floor. I mean, people probably thought, like, what is wrong with this girl? And you know what? I had just escaped a cult. And if I could go back, I would have yelled it. I just escaped a cult. And I'm pretty sure that whole place would have been clapping for me, because I was so dancing. True. And I danced. And to this day, that's one of the things that I do to help my energy, is I just go out dancing. And honestly, doing that healed me, you know, because a lot of people are like, well, how did you heal? Dancing healed me. So creativity.
That was part of it for me. Like, truly dancing, I have to be honest, has only been in the last 8 months that I've actually gotten truly to, by myself, just freely dance. But what helped was, and I was still in the church at this time. Oh no, was I in the new church? I can't remember. But I went to another city with my sister came in from America to visit me. And I had made another friend in Sydney who had also left the Potter's house. And that's two of them and me. So the three of us went to a really cool club in Sydney. Not like a major club. It's more like a small, like cool people lounge club. And Sneaky Sound System, I think, was there DJing, which Sneaky Sound System was a big band, a big group in Australia. I don't think they ever made it to the US. And so we got put on the list and we went in and I got cocktails, you know, had alcohol. Woo! Right. And for the first time ever in my life, I had already done the dance floor stuff. So yeah, going to places where you could go on the dance floor is a great way to start shifting yourself out.
Yeah, and you're shaking your body. So a lot of our bodies carry this trauma. So for those mm-hmm. that are like really dancing for me, because I used to dance before the cult, so it helped heal me, go back to before I entered the cult, but also because our bodies carry a lot of that trauma and that pain. It carries it all. So mm-hmm. by dancing, you're moving your body, you're mm-hmm. shifting and shaking this energy so that it can move and release.
I had no idea. But for me, the only place and time I could dance was in that environment for some reason. I think the energy of everyone else helped me. But you know what's funny is this particular night, there was no one on the dance floor because we got there early. Because of course we're noobs, we're total scrubs. We don't do this. We just escaped a cult. So we went and we were the first people to dance on the dance Aww. Floor because, like, I was like, fuck it, let's go. We don't even know how to dance. I'm Mexican. I'll just wiggle my booty, you know, right. And we got the place started. Awesome. And that was such a positive memory for me. And part of the many steps I took to leave. I just started doing stuff like that. I didn't give a fuck. Oh man, people would. Oh, if anybody had seen me at this place I used to go to, where the restaurant after 10 p.m. would turn into more of a club vibe. I used to go there all the time because I would get a dance floor. There'd be dinner. There'd be good music. And I just go with, because I started making friends outside of the church. This is something I feel like probably why my story might be a little bit different to some people, is because I already started just be like, I don't give a fuck. I'm out of here. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. But then I would go to church and I would just be like, you know what I mean? You know, internally trying to like block myself from my eyes rolling into the back of my head at the stupidity of everything. But those sorts of things were helping me. So that's why for me, the shunning happened before I left. And then afterwards I was like, but the other thing I wanted to mention, and this was like something I noticed in the Potter's house, there would be the random occasion. There would be on occasions where I would feel like the Christian way to put it, the presence of God. I know now that that is the presence of God. That is what it is I was feeling love. I was feeling the vibration of love. I was feeling a good frequency, finally. And there would be moments of this because for whatever reason, a pastor would visit or a pastor would somehow preach on something that actually wasn't fucking wrong. And they managed to break through their own bullshit and give a message that was actually love. About love, and that did actually match a universal truth. Mm-hmm. And it used to puzzle me. I'd be like, how could something so shitty, how can God show up at something so shitty? How does this happen sometimes? I've realized that there are universal laws. There are universal truths. Source, creator, that energy, universe is actually what I always knew it was in my soul. Beautiful, loving, good. We are in a beautiful, loving universe. I could cry for the opposite reason now, that just for the goodness and beauty that exists in the world. And if they for one goddamn second would just cut the bullshit and just allow a moment of love and freedom to come through, guess what? God isn't judgy and shitty. Universe isn't judgy and shitty. Universe doesn't care for all of this bullshit. Love is love. That frequency is that frequency no matter what, and will always show up if we, you know, match to it, open up to it, let it come through. And I feel like that's the case with churches as well. This was the other thing I wanted to say when I was kind of like constantly like, don't let me forget the other thing. The other thing is, and in churches as well, I feel like there are, and this has taken me a long time to work through, I feel like there can be churches where they're doing and practicing and living things in a way that despite the religious tainting of reality, you know, love still exists. It can still be a positive community. It can still be very free and loving. But there are also on the flip side, a lot of churches, genuine churches, that within their four walls or within their congregation, behave, preach, practice, pressure in such a way that they are a cult also. The moment anything, even if it's not even religious related, it's something else, doesn't have to be what it is. The moment anything starts to control you and separate you from yourself. Number one, anything that separates you from yourself, from listening to your intuition, from trusting your gut, from that self-contained guidance system, warning sign. Anything that separates you from love, from the highest good, that tells you that you can't attain it or you can't achieve it or you can't connect with it or you're separate to it and you're not like this with it. The second the second anything tells you that, red flag.
Right.
Run away.
Yeah.
There needs to be absolute freedom to be completely connected with source, universe, God, the cosmos, whatever you want to call it. And yourself. Those have to always be intact. Always. So I just felt like that was really important, because I know there's going to be people listening who just go to a regular church. And I'm not trying to say that all religion is bad. I mean, I do have some thoughts. I do think the patriarchy has twisted shit very severely.
Yeah, well, and I would say to research the beginning of Christianity for those. I have said that. Is if you go back and research it, you're gonna be shocked. A lot of the stuff that's in the Bible is it's, you know, if you go into history even, a lot of the stuff where it stems from is not good.
And I would actually love, if you'd ever be open to it, I'd actually be love to do an episode and chat about this.
Yeah, so definitely research about the beginning of any religion that you're trying to go into. You need to go as far back as you can. Because what's being taught and preached today, you'll realize that they're leaving a lot of stuff out, and it's really, it's going to disconnect you from who you really are. And so knowing that you can never be disconnected from the source of love, because you are the source of love. And if you are the source of love, how can you be disconnected from love? If you are love, you came from love, you are love. And just know that you're the divine embodiment of God, source, universe itself. So there is nothing outside of you that you have to receive to be completely perfect. And so it's beautiful to know that once you leave the cult, you're able to think for yourself. Yeah. You're able to think for yourself.
Yeah. And here's the thing about leaving. And I feel like understanding the fallout afterwards is really important. I wish I'd had some kind of warning. I didn't know. So when you leave an environment like that, the way you've been so deconstructed for so many years that when you're finally free and out to be yourself, this is what happened to me. I had such a sense of relief that I absolutely crashed. Absolutely crashed. I was already at the point, here's what it looked like. This is why I say, like, even though I still have, you know, for the rest of my life, there will be things that come up that I need to heal in the moment, and that will always happen, I'm sure. But when I left, just the thought of going somewhere public where I had to speak to anyone, I would instantly turn red and just have extreme stress. I couldn't go to restaurants. If I went, I'd be like, Mom, Dad, can you please handle the servers? I can't talk to anybody. And they were like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, I don't fucking know. Like, please don't remind me how shattered of a human being I am right now. Please don't remind me that I've been so deconstructed and destroyed that I'm no longer myself. I don't even recognize myself. I was literally a shattered human being. And I collapsed for a year. I laid in bed and the moment I was finally able to rest, I needed rest so badly that I absolutely collapsed. It took a year of eating Lucky Charms and watching TV for me to be able to start doing anything beyond that. Mm-hmm. Because everything was massive panic attack, massive crying, massive exhaustion, in fact, one time I was sitting at an airport with my cousin and my sister, and we were waiting for somebody. There was this program on TV about veteran soldiers coming back with PTSD and needing, you know, support dogs. It was about the dogs. Oh gosh, I'm going to cry just thinking about this. Every single symptom that these veterans had, I had. It was literally like coming home from war. Yes. I haven't thought about this in a long time.
So true. It was a war zone.
It may not be this bad for others. I don't know. It was potentially this bad for me because there was the complication of also being married to a narcissist. Mm-hmm. And having to live with it at church and at home 24/7. But even if somebody's husband wasn't a narcissist, I guarantee you it was this exhausting anyway, because they were forced to be a certain way at home anyway. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if y'all heard that, but I think my dog is dreaming and it sounds like a fart. Anyway. So, like, I knew I couldn't work a job. Mm-hmm. That's her snoring. I can hear it. I knew I couldn't work a job. I just knew there's no way I'd be able to do it. Thankfully, my parents let me live at home for a while, and they just gave me a little bit of money. Wasn't much. Oh my gosh, let me wake her up.
That's so supportive, though. I'm glad you're speaking about
A lot of people don't have this. And you know what? And I did try to live a life first. So first I left the cult. I went to this church. I tried to resume a normal life. I did stuff with friends. I made things, practices and experiences that I enjoyed. Like I would go to this local sports club over there. It's a thing. It's like a pub and a family place all at the same time. It's one of my favorite places to go and meet up with people or to go by myself. So I started creating a life for myself before I left. I even had a really good job. And I quit that and I started my own business taking care of dogs. And then I eventually, so I was doing stuff. Long story short, I realized I was so crushed and destroyed as a person that I had to just come home.
And would you say that you felt like you were crushed as a person specifically because of your time in the CFM cult?
I would say so. because it is a combo, but I would say it was because of the cult, because that exacerbated everything, like everything. So including, sure, I was married to a narcissist, but guess what? Now that narcissist was exacerbated because they were functioning on these practices of this church. Right. So it's like, dial it up, just dial everything up.
And I just want to say, for the you were married inside the cult, you were encouraged to marry him inside of the cult. This is a cult created marriage. That's what I like to call it. And that's all in part one. For those that haven't seen part one, we talk about your marriage. They can go to that link and watch.
I mean, people didn't like it for certain reasons, which I won't get into here. But at the same time,
but it was a picture of what needed to happen in your life. You needed to get married.
But exactly.
Preferably, you need to get married to somebody in the
cult. Rules are you marry someone in the cult. Mm-hmm. In the cult. So it ticked all the boxes. So there was no reason for them to ultimately say no and ban it.
Right.
And that's just how it worked. So
things are bad because you're in the cult. Things are bad because you're married to this man who you realize is a narcissist.
Yeah. And you're trying your best to survive and trying to find pockets and slivers of spaces and places where you can be yourself again. Oh, this is what happened to me, where I could be myself again, where I'm just trying to survive. I'm still trying to live my best life. I'm trying to find, okay, what's the most positive perspective I can have so that I can like live my life. So I can, you know, but it just, a cult doesn't allow it. At the end of the day, a cult does not allow you to live your best life. And at the end of the day, your best life for you is how you're going to naturally be a light anyway and bring good things into the world. Ironically, that's the best way to do it. So I came back and even when I got to, and here's the biggest thing. Time does not heal all wounds. Mm. All it does is it gives you a break. As long as you're out of the situation, it gives you a break. Oh, because I did try taking a break at one point. I left and came to America for 6 months to try to take a break. But, you know, and I got better with a break. But guess what? As soon as you're back into it.
Yeah, you definitely need a safe place to begin the healing. So
you need a safe place.
What was your safe place, you would say?
Coming home to my parents' house and being able to just collapse on the bed and watch Vampire Diaries 24/7 and shows 24/7. All the movies, all the TV shows that I still hadn't caught up on or watched that I missed during that block of time where you weren't allowed to watch them. That's what I did. And then I did, thankfully, eventually had a job again, but I found even in the job, I would have panic attacks soon as men would talk to me, or if my body even remotely sensed that there was a hyper-religious person, forget about it. Right. Instant panic attack. I used to have to go to the bathroom and try to, you know, like this, get all the energy out because I didn't know how to handle a panic attack. So I would just start punching, start doing boxing, you know, trying to shake it all out and breathe because I didn't know how to handle the panic attacks. I didn't know how to handle anything. All I knew is I had fucking PTSD. It's been, you know, 3 years. How come I'm still not better? 4 years, 5 years, 6 years. It took a long time because I thought just getting on with my life and living my best and being out of the situation and just with a bit of time, you know, I'd be all right.
So then what did you eventually do, you would say? What really helped you?
Okay, so a few things. I like to think of it as like a honeycomb where you know how it's got different angles. So there are some real highlight moments and then the most powerful moment at the end, which, you know, we're going to probably go over time if that's okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you when I have to go.
When you have to go. Okay. So the first one was kind of like you. I went to see a psychologist and which is for talk therapy, where you just talk stuff out. And that's really good in a sense because, and everything I share, by the way, in the honeycomb, just because I did it in a particular order doesn't mean that's the order for someone else. I'm going to just put this all out here and then listen to your body and see which one goes, oh, I need that. I want to do that. that's where you start. Some of it's free, some of it costs money, but I'm just going to share it all because guess what? The universe is amazing and will find ways to bring things to you that you want and need once you identify that, ooh, that feels good. I need that. So I was talking to a therapist, not a counselor. There's a difference. Counselor. And that was good because I, you know, in the Potter's house, you get fed such a negative perspective, negative, that you don't even though I think of myself as a positive, upbeat person, I didn't even realize how negative I was. And so talking to someone helps, they help you start kind of like there's a tangled, you know, ball of yarn to help you start untangling it. And here's the most powerful moment. We finally got to the point where the counselor was like, what does Heather want? What does Heather want? At this point, that question had not been an option. I remember sitting there. This was actually with a therapist. I was a counselor in Australia and I was here. So I was talking to her and I said, really tiny span of time, this much crossed my mind. She asked me the question, what does Heather want? And I can't remember what bullshit thing I said. I said, blah, 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 blah. I essentially said, what I want is irrelevant. And she goes, no, what does Heather want? And I realized in that moment, the Potter's house and my ex and everything had led me to believe that what I wanted was irrelevant, not even an option. Man, I'm gonna cry thinking about it. So just thinking about what does Heather want? What do I want? In that moment of, it was literally, I can't even describe it. It felt like it started, like heat started in my stomach. It was almost cold and hot at the same time. And then it went up to my chest and it was like, I know now, tons of energy, tons of trapped emotions, years and years and years of repressing what does Heather want came up in that moment. And it was so powerful. Like I physically felt it across my whole chest and down to my fingertips, everything in my body had an instant reaction. And then it dawned on me, I'm going to throw up. And so I threw the phone down and ran across the bedroom to the bathroom that was attached to the room. And in that short span of time, this is the only time I've ever projectile vomited. That came out like a fucking fire hydrant. Just, like all that energy blew up and blew out of my body. That's how much I had trapped and pent up for years that what I want is irrelevant. And so that was one of the most powerful moments where I know now it's because trapped energy got to move. The second would be, thank God, I saw a therapist that specializes in trauma. And she practices what's called EMDR. And if you can do this, I highly recommend it. And the reason why EMDR is so helpful is because the whole time you're doing it, it's creating an even pattern in your left and right brain, right? So what that's doing is that's stabilizing your system. So you're like calm, peaceful, steady. And with the help of the therapist, you work through some of these more traumatic memories. Usually the earlier, the better. You work through it. And it's helping to rewire your neurons. So that way, through talking about it, your body learns that it can go you can handle it peacefully and you can come to a positive conclusion. And what I mean by that is you can choose your own perspective that you want to have on the memory and whatever lesson you need to learn from it, just depending on what it was. So some things were like one time somebody was getting married and I went to go to the wedding, but leading up to going to the wedding, there were things about it that seemed like red flags to me. I was projecting things from my own life onto it that were unhealed. And I was so panicky about it. I started literally pacing like a trapped lion in my house. I was like a trapped wildcat. I was just like, this isn't good, is it? And I guess what? I did. I forced myself to go. That I still have that programming, like where you have to do this. You have to do the right thing. You have to go to this family member's wedding. It's very important. You have to go. And my sister was like, Heather, you don't have to go. If this doesn't feel good, you don't have to go. So I went. And the whole time I was completely disassociating, completely out of my body, completely like a zombie, completely blacking out. People, like when the groom spoke to me, complete blackout. When the relatives came and spoke to me, complete blackout. Like my brain literally went blank. That's how bad my PTSD was. I would completely leave my body, you know. And I talked to the therapist and she said, you know what? You're still trapped in that wedding banquet hall. And so we did a session where we helped myself realize that at any moment I could walk out the door, get myself a cab or an Uber and drive home. I was never trapped. Nice. Right? So that's how you start healing some of this programming from the Potter's house that you have in your brain, where you force yourself to do things, where you force yourself to be trapped and to feel. Yeah. So that's, and also when you're talking to somebody who's so calm, they know how to handle the situation and they know how to have a higher perspective on it because you're just so deep in it. You can't even see straight. It's like having a stable parent or a stable older loved one. And it is very healing and soothing for that reason. Because it's like, finally, you can talk to someone who's on your side, who doesn't tell you what's right or wrong for you. They just guide you back to yourself. They just help you untangle the bullshit in a very safe way. Highly recommend EMDR. The other thing, and I just will forever thank my therapist for this. You don't need a therapist. You can go find this yourself if you want to. Trauma-informed yoga. Thank God. So she got me to go to this 8-week trauma-informed yoga thing where every Monday night we would go do this trauma yoga. I'm going to cry thinking about it. The first night I went, and we went through the whole yoga stuff. At the end of the session, when I was walking out, you know, actually, I'm going to backtrack here in a second. When I was walking out, I was like, oh my God. I felt energy moving through my body. And guess what? I felt it going all the way down to my feet. I felt my feet on the ground. And if you haven't had PTSD, maybe this sounds weird, but I didn't even know that I could not feel my legs or my feet. Didn't even know I couldn't feel my body and that I couldn't feel myself walking on the ground until the yoga helped me get back in my body.
Beautiful.
The first time I did an EMDR session with the therapist, that happened as well. It was slightly different because with the yoga, I could feel the energy moving. With the first time I closed an EMDR session, closed means you finish working through a particular memory. I remember sitting on that couch and I was like, I felt so heavy. I felt my back touching the back of the chair. I felt my arms touching the arms of the chair and I felt my feet on the ground. I was like, I feel so heavy. I was telling her, I can feel the chair. I can feel my body sitting in the chair. And she helped explain to me that's because I was such in a permanent state of ongoing disassociation. I was so out of my body. I didn't even notice. I couldn't feel the bed. I couldn't feel the chair. I couldn't feel anything. And until I felt it, once I felt my body sitting in a chair, I was like, oh my God, I didn't even know I couldn't feel my body.
So sad.
And when I walked out of the therapy session, I was like, oh my God, walking down the hallway. I was even like, is this really loud? My feet felt like clunk, 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 clunk. Wow. I was like, oh my God, I feel my feet. They feel so heavy. Touch. Is this what it feels like to walk in a body and to walk on your feet? Is this what it's like to be normal? Wow. And it's like I could hear my footsteps and feel my footsteps and the feeling of my whole body. It almost felt loud to me. It wasn't audibly louder. It just, my whole body felt loud because I hadn't felt it in years. you know, have other stories like that. But anyway, so EMDR did that, and so did trauma-informed yoga therapy. After the 8-week session, I did hire her one more time for 2 more sessions. And what we did was she just did some Ayurvedic science with me. So stuff that I could learn to support my body so that it was more balanced and healthy, just little tricks I could do to help me get into my body and start getting some energy. But the yoga did that as well. And so after that yoga and after some conversation with the therapist and learning tools and ways to soothe my body and tell my body it's safe, like just learning all these kinds of tools, like hot cup of tea, hot bath. Like since you're in the process, you're not allowed to speak your truth at all. You cannot tell the truth. You cannot speak freely. So what would constantly happen is I would always have locked jaw and a locked throat. And I'd be having my sessions with my therapist and she would stop me and she would give me exercises to loosen everything and to turn and to vibrate my vagus nerve. Your vagus nerve soothes and calms your whole body. So she would get me to do like this sound, but loud, until it opened my throat and opened my jaw and like it would unlock it. Things like that. So that's why somatic is another word that's yes. Body. So mm-hmm. If you can find a trauma-informed therapist that incorporates somatic practice and EMDR, highly recommend. If you can't find a trauma-informed yoga instructor mm-hmm. and do some learn yoga, because what would happen is later I would start having panic attacks, you know, because I was still learning. I would have panic attacks. And you know what I did? I went to the gym and I spent an hour in the free area doing everything I could remember from the yoga. And that soothed my body and would help me get back into my body, learning breathing techniques. Like breathing for me, I would get stuck at my hips. And mm-hmm. so I would have to practice getting past my hips and down to my knees, past my knees and down to my feet. You know, we trap things different places, women, particularly the pelvis. My energy center in the pelvis was so pent up that I didn't even know this, but my legs would constantly curl up like that. I'd be watching TV and I started noticing things my body would do that I would be like all bringing my knees up to my chest. I'd be in the car and my legs would be like clenched and I would start to relax my legs, watch TV. And I just have to constantly practice it. Every time I noticed my legs clenching up, release, let them go, stretch them out. You know, she taught me things, all kinds of tools for releasing your pelvis, releasing energy, you know, just stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay. Trying to fast forward. Okay. So there's the mind and the body connection. That's why those are so great. Mm-hmm. And then, the next thing that really, really helped with my healing journey was, incorporating spirit, the spiritual. And this is really hard for anyone in religion mm-hmm. Or upon ourselves.
Well, and yoga. I wanted to say that.
Well, actually yoga too. Yoga. Oh, it's okay. So bad.
Yeah. And we have about 10 more minutes. So I'm trying to, but the yoga thing as well. I know that if you're watching this and you're either still in the cult, you're trying to leave the cult, or you just left the cult, yoga was groomed. We were groomed to believe that it was evil and it was bad. It was so even you saying that word might trigger them, but I would recommend that you, again, go in within your own body and research, because if you're just getting information from this one little environment, you're always going to think the same.
And guess what? The Potter's House, any cult, anything like that, they don't want you to connect with your body. They don't want you to be mm-mm. an autonomous, self-guided being. That's why yoga's bad.
Right.
Because yoga does 2 things. It connects you to your body and it connects you to spirit. It connects you to the universe through breath, through connecting with whatever word, life force energy, creator, yes. source, God, spirit, energy, whatever,
love.
Whatever love at the end of the day, love.
Yes.
It connects you with love through the breath and connects you with your body.
Yes, so that your own love.
That's why yoga is so powerful. And that's why it's so like, ooh,
Right. And I'll put some links in the description box as well. I'm going to put some links for some of the stuff that you mentioned. And okay. I also know yin yoga. I've used yin yoga for yin trauma.
Yin yoga is good. And the reason you want to, I say trauma-informed therapy, yin yoga is one that'll match. Because yoga will do, it's a practice. It'll do, it's right. a tool for you to use your body for different purposes. One is going to be way too activating and could potentially trigger panic attacks and energize too much. Normally, if you're dealing with years and years and years of stress and having to fight your way through it, that's not what you want. You want something right. that's going to calm you and help you just release all that forcing and willing yourself and white knuckling and clenching and trapping and bottling it up. You want something that's going to help you and open your heart to be able to like receive love again and receive light and life and joy,
that's,
anything
that's
good.
That's probably why dancing helped me, because I was just releasing my body.
Yes, that's why dancing is so good, because it does help release the hips. It helps move yes. every energy center. For me, because I think the mind right. fuckery I went through, I was too clenched. And the only time I could dance was for a long time in environments where there was dancing. It was only at the end of my healing that I finally was free to dance. So there's two more things. I'll just maybe do the most important one because I know we're getting close on time. When I say spirit, I'll just say that one quickly. Basically, I did in desperation cry for help one time. And I was immediately guided to a very specific tarot card reader. And I know that's going to be another triggering one. Anything spiritual like that, true. Some is not good. It's very important that that you ask them, do you specify that you only work with the highest good and highest light for the highest good of all? That I didn't know this, but thankfully, you know, God brought this person to me. This is before I met Mandy. And spirit, my ancestors, the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, gave me homework and gave me guidance through that tarot card reading. That was very important to me. I did some energy healing sessions as well, where, you know, that just helps clean your aura, clean your energy body, cleanse your chakras. All that really helped me a lot. The most important thing was you get told that talking to your ancestors is bad, spirit guides are bad. You're never alone in this life. This universe is so much more beautiful than we're led to believe. They're there for you. You just ask ancestors that are here for my highest good and my healing, please help me. My spirit guides that are here for that are of the highest good and here for my highest good, please help me. Ask for help. Angels, please ask angels for help. Angels aren't this weird, distant thing. Trust me. Complete cascade of events after this happened that just launched me to the next level of healing. And the most importantly, brought me to this. And this is probably the most important thing out of everything. I got my power back. And the way I was so disempowered for so many years, childhood trauma, marital trauma, and the motherfucking Potter's house, whose whole MO is to disempower you. Disempower you is their MO, and to separate you from God. That the only way you can attain anything with God is through XYZ, blah, 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 blah. Bullshit. God is love. God does love you. You're together all the time. So the way I got my power back was I realized at some point all these tools got me to a point, but I was still terrified of certain things. And certain things were still always triggering me to the point that it was bringing my life to screeching halt. I would have to go to my room and I would have to just tend to myself and lock myself in my room. You know, it was still absolutely halting my life. And what this did, and what I did was I realized, and my guides and everything helped me through this, the spiritual practice, everything brought me to this moment. And I think this moment is possible as step one. So you don't even need money. You don't need anything. If you can get to this step on your own, the way my journey went, and this is, I believe I was guided this way, you know, that was mine. That's why I call it a honeycomb. No starting point is right or wrong. The point is you need all of them. Mind, body, spirit, all these angles, sustenance, feeding yourself well, all these things are important. But ultimately, I just got to the point where it's like, I can't be scared of this stuff anymore. And the things that I was most afraid to look at and remember, I realized I have to look at them. I have to turn the darkest rooms in my house, in my little internal house that terrified me the most. I have to go open that door and turn the light on, even though I was terrified. And there are a number of things. One of them is experiences I had in the Potter's house. But every traumatic experience that was, that I just started meditating in the mornings, and I could only do like 3 minutes. It's not like you guys, I was not okay. As much as I was finally back in my body and finally, you know, doing good, thanks to all the help, there was still something. And what I did is I would meditate and then I would ask my guides and my angels to help me. And I just sat and I would, in my mind, go back in time to a certain event. And I have to say, I did a lot of guided meditations that helped me learn how to do this. So guided meditations are also really, really, really good tools. And I would recall a moment. I would travel back in time in my mind's eye to a moment, and I would look at myself in that moment. And I would spend time saying to myself everything I needed to hear in that moment. And I would visualize myself hugging myself. So sometimes it was in the years where I was in the Potter's house, and I would give myself, be like, man, so much compassion for what I felt. I acknowledged what I felt. I gave words to what I felt. And it takes time, and some things are really hard and you're going to cry. But, you know, if I was a kid, I just imagined giving myself a hug, and I like visualized little me, because I actually went through some traumatic things as a baby, and I held myself and I gave myself a kiss on the forehead. You know, everything I needed to know in each one of those moments, I told myself. Some of them were very hard because I had somehow shamed myself into, why did I do this? Why did I go there? Or this was done to me. The Potter's house is predatory. And they are. This is true. My ex, predatory. You know, I was groomed by a borderline rapist. I take it back. I don't want to trigger anyone, but very traumatic experience being married to this person. I had to go to some very dark memories in the Potter's house, marriage, childhood, and give myself compassion. But there were some, when you're a child, nothing is your fault. Absolutely nothing. And you just need to give yourself the words of safety, of compassion, of soothing, all the comfort and soothing that you needed to emotionally have. Give yourself that. And guess what? It's like magic, quantum entanglement, whatever word you want to give it. Magically, it shifts in your body today, as if you had actually gotten in Doctor Who's TARDIS and traveled back in time.
Yes.
As if. It's that powerful. The other thing was, anything past the age of 18, even though my ex was a predator and the Potter's house is predatory, so is the military. So if there are any ex-military people, I hope everything relating to the cult you realize applies to you as well, because the military is also traumatizing and occult in its practice, because it's very controlling and very predatory. So what I had to do is I had to give myself all that love and compassion for everything I experienced and put words to it. And sometimes it was very, very hard, because what I did was very, very dark. But anything over the age of 18, I took a moment to realize, at the end of the day, on some level, I chose this. Even though it was non-informed consent. I didn't know all the details. I didn't understand. These were predatory, and it doesn't detract from the fact that they are predatory. It doesn't excuse or anything. But what it did in those moments where I was like, you know what, on some level, I allowed this to happen to me. And what I realized is that me today would never. So there was a combination of going back to myself in very painful moments, where I allowed things to be done to me and allowed things to happen to me. And I have to realize that if I acknowledge I allowed them to happen, I actually take my power back. This is going to sound really strange until you experience it yourself. But trust me, in that moment of being like, that was me then, but I know more now, and I've gone back in time now to basically deposit this knowledge into myself in that time, that, you know what? You're okay and you're safe. You know why? Because you are very powerful and you would never allow this to happen to you. You would never say yes to this ever in a million years again. Mm. And I deposited that acknowledgement of self-power into myself back then and be like, I became healed and whole and powerful because I would never. Today, the amount of things that I would handle so different, that I do handle so differently, that I would never. Words cannot explain the incredible moment like that. I kid you not. I went to my darkest moment, some of my darkest moments like that. So one thing in particular I had constant triggers about, and I had to constantly soothe myself and put in all the practices. Guess what? I had a couple of days, almost instantly I got presented with the scenario that was constantly triggering me. There was somebody that reminded me very, very much of my ex and was also a Christian. And so all the trigger points, I constantly had to not be in the same room with this person. I had to immediately leave. Everything gone. All the projections I was putting on this person, gone. Why? Because somehow giving myself compassion and taking my power back. When I was young, I didn't know anything about myself or to protect myself. I just didn't know how to protect myself. But I know how to protect myself now. Yeah. And somehow it's like time, it's as powerful as literal time travel. Yes. I promise you,
I love it.
It's incredible. I am not triggered like that at all anymore. Now I know what happens when I say trigger now, it's kind of like things will happen. I'll be like, whoa, 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 where is this coming from? Mm-hmm. And I'll stop and I'll go on the back patio or something and take a moment and I'll think about where it's coming from. And I'll just visit myself in that time, give myself compassion, acknowledge what I'm feeling, and choose the perspective that helps me the most, and just over and over and over. And now it's like,
I'm gonna have to stop you just for time, but okay. I mean thank you so much for everything that you have shared here. Thank you so much for sharing, especially your healing, because you're showing people that there is a possibility that if we have the power inside of us to heal. And everybody's healing journey is different. So just because, you know, this is your healing journey, my healing journey could look different. And everybody that's leaving in a toxic environment or has left, their healing journey can look different. But as long as you're safe, healthy, and whole at the end, that is what matters. So I just want to thank Heather Wiley. And it's totally possible. You are able to be free, not just escaping a cult, but escaping it inside of you. Mm-hmm. And so anybody that is interested in being interviewed, go ahead and reach out to me. My email and all the other links are going to be below. And so thank you again. And for everybody who has left the CFM call and has not shared their story, I just want you to know that we're here to be the validation that what you did experience and endure, it was real. It was not okay. And you are able to heal. Thank you all so much. Thank you again, Heather. And
you're welcome.
So incredible.
That life is good. I'm fucking loving life now. Trust me. I'm blown away.
Follow Heather at her IG. Her link's going to be below as well. And continue to speak up.
Yes. All right. Love everybody. To the gal who was saying she felt like she needed to talk to someone, hopefully by me sharing the things that helped me, that helps you find an environment to talk. Follow me on Instagram. I'll share some more of my stories.
Awesome. Bye, guys. Thank you all so much for listening.